Welcome back, Power Hour Nation. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Freund. Joining us in this hour is going to be Timothy Spearman, academic, a broadcaster, researcher, extraordinaire, screenplay writer, author, and all-around good guy because he's devoted his life to expand knowledge and teach students how to think as opposed to what to think. And in this modern era where you say the slightest thing out of line and you're getting the head noogie in any form of academia, it takes real determination and guts to stand up to that sort of abuse and allow children to flower and become the best that they can be. And that just isn't allowed by society overall. Welcome aboard, Timothy, and we're glad to have you here.
Thanks, buddy. You know, just what you said is very kind and very true in the sense that, you know, you're up against a great deal when you're trying to stand for the truth. You know, you reminded me of my academic trials that go back to the very beginning, and I wrote a PhD that I was given permission to work on called The Ethics of Timelessness, and it looked at our concepts of time and our utopian philosophies, which are always future-oriented, and we always pursue this utopian future at the expense of the present human condition, and we wage war against our society out of some pursuit of future goal, ideal, utopian future dream that always wages war on the present human condition. And so it's self-defeating, of course, because you're chasing rainbows that keep receding into the future, and as much as you try, you're never going to achieve the dream. And so this was the basis of it, and I got into concepts of immunity and the autoimmune diseases that we are faced with, and Jacques Derrida's concept of difference and how it's analogous as a textual component to that of HIV, AIDS, or other retroviruses, because it's a non-word and a non-concept, and it actually undermines the social scientist's ability to conduct rhetorical defense because it's already infected with death in the outside. And so I ended up creating a thesis that was actually a super immune system where the combinations and permutations of rhetorical defense were virtually endless, because each chapter and each section of the thesis was indirectly defending the other. And it was very complex work, and it was failed by the University of Warwick, and they asked me to come over to sit viva, and I came over at great expense, and when the examiners showed up, it was clear they were intoxicated and had had a few. And I was standing outside the exam room preparing for what was to come, and I actually had two epiphanies, past life regressionary type of epiphanies at that point in time, where I saw myself being barraged and attacked in Market Square while being in the stocks by rotten vegetables and fruit and whatever else. And then in the other vision, I saw myself in a gas chamber being gassed and was scratching at the walls. and I was actually bent over double in the hallway, laboring for breath because of the intensity of the vision. But that prepared me for what was to come. They didn't permit me a defense. They said that they'd already decided to fail me on the basis of my written work, that it was of no scholarly value and did nothing to advance the field of knowledge. I insisted upon a viva because I had come all that way, and I said, you can say what you want, you can decide what you want, but we're having a viva. You can't bring someone across the water in this kind of situation without giving them a chance at some type of defense. And so I did defend the thesis. I did refute every argument that they made. I also made them extremely uncomfortable because they said I had no demonstrated no knowledge of any of the languages of the philosophers in which I was engaging in terms of their original language. And I said, that's not true. I showed knowledge of the French language with Jacques Derrida. And I said, it's clear, d'une tone apocalyptique, it's of an apocalyptic tone. And I said something, you know, phraseology at the time in French, and it made them extremely uncomfortable because they didn't have any language skills beyond English themselves, and they were accusing me of something that clearly was something that they had no right to criticize. And so that was that. And then I went to the student liaison officer for the university and told him that, you know, this was what had happened. And I told him that the internal department examiner had said to me, look, you seem to have made a choice, that being that academic institutions are not for you. I would advise you to seek another avenue for your work if you wish to avoid being crucified. And he said, wait a minute, he actually said that to you? And I said, yes, sir, he did indeed. And he said, well, based on what you told me, if you're not granted an appeal, there would have to be corruption at every level of this institution. So indeed, I was not granted an appeal. The letter came about turning down the appeal sometime after that from the appeal committee. I called him and said, Professor Stone, did you recall telling me in an interview in your office that if I had my appeal turned down, there would have to be corruption at the university? Do you stand by that, sir? Yes. Right. He was very offhand. He didn't volunteer any other information. Someone may have been in the office with him, or he may have been worried that his phone was bugged, but he at least gave me an affirmative response. That was the end of the conversation. So after that, I was staying at a friend's house, and I was being followed. I had sent a message to the agent general for the province of Ontario, Robert Nixon, the former head of the Liberal Party for the province of Ontario. He was a friend of my uncle who was the mayor of Nanticoke, which is an amalgam of towns, including Brantford and so forth, out that way in Norfolk County. And he had interviewed me, spoken to me about what had happened, and he said he'd look into it. He sent me a very patronizing letter saying that I should see what the world of work held for me because he had looked into the matter and it didn't seem to be anything untoward to him. When I was in his office, he said, there's no history of mental illness in any of this, is there? And I said, why would you ask? And he said, well, my son was studying philosophy some years ago, and He seemed to have some pretty wild and far-out theories, and so he was institutionalized, and he's been in the mental institution ever since. And I said, well, I'm sorry about your son, but I don't see what that possibly could have to do with me. Just because you study a certain field of knowledge does not make you all, you know, ready for the loony bin. So this is rather irrelevant. So in this letter, he was extremely patronizing, and I wrote him back and basically put him in his place. And consequently, I was followed and I was being photographed by some man sitting in the passenger seat of this car that was pulled off on the side of the road. And he was trying to disguise what he was doing by shifting the camera to a storefront sign and then shifting it back to me, but I could see what was going on. Then there was a black helicopter outside the penthouse apartment where I was staying that night, and it was shining its beam of light directly on our location. And to make a long story short, this man, a professor emeritus at McMaster University named John Thomas, of all names, he was the professor emeritus for the philosophy department and the medical ethics department. He recommended the thesis for publication and wrote the foreword for it and highly recommended it. And after that, George, what happened was the head of the Mellon Press in Lewiston, New York, he lost a lot of support for the publishing company right after the publication of my book, because they got all kinds of negative reviews about publishing scholarly work, and they had never in their whole history as a publishing company ever received any negative reviews before. Then Dr. Richardson was fired from his tenured position at the University of Toronto, kangaroo court type of situation, with a couple of complaints from students about how he was distracted by his publishing concerns, not doing his teaching role. Then the Lewiston Press, the Mellon Press, as it's called, it burned down, the publishing house, and all but four copies of my book went with it. They did come back and rebuild, but it's just to show you what the price is of telling the truth, because in the fourth chapter of my thesis, I had a damning critique of the higher education system through an essay Nietzsche wrote called The Uses and Disadvantages of History for Life, and did a kind of analysis of it and how it applied to the academic world. They didn't like that. And when they fail a thesis, it gets railroaded into obscurity, and they don't stock it in the university library, so they purged it, basically. But then in 1999, I had my thesis reevaluated and resubmitted as though it were a brand new thesis, even though it had already been published, and the Intercultural Open University of Amsterdam approved it. So sorry to tell such a long story, but I want people to understand the depths of intrigue and the depths of hardship that a person of integrity has to go through to campaign for the truth. And this was just a very, very small window of time that I'm describing, and yet it's been a persistent series of sabotage ever since, including the fact that some clown has just ripped off all of my research on Gandhi just before the publication of Shakespeare's Codex, All the World Staged and We Are Merely Played, and has posted it on my academic website, and I get it. It's sent to me as a recommended book to read because it's up my research alley. Yeah, well, it's up my research butt. It's gone right into my whole, thesis. It's interesting, isn't it? The timing.
Well, by and large, it's all summed up by one word, and that's called heretic. And once you're determined by the powers that be that you are a counter-revolutionary to the New World Order or the aspirations of domination and control of the planet and its people, then, you know, it doesn't matter where you go or what you do, you will be blasphemed. And that's just the rite of passage, really, is that these things happen to us. And, you know, Jesus had to be nailed to a cross for telling his truths. It's just the way the world works at this time. And but unfortunately, it takes, you know, real perseverance to stand up to the onslaughts and realize this has happened all through time, and it will happen all through time in the future until we finally get a hold of, you know, some mechanism where we can be truly free and independent. And usually that removes the money gods from society, which, you know, most of the power structure are inured to very, very deeply. But, you know, you've taken on many, many projects. And, you know, I highlighted a little bit at the beginning that, you know, you got in on the USS Liberty Project. You did a massive amount of research and work on the loss of what is perceived to be the Titanic. And the fact that when something is written down and repeated over and over and over again, it becomes somehow some sort of divine truth, when in fact it's just the most repeated lie. And when you look at what really happened to the White Star Line, and the fact that, you know, they were just getting rid of a scrap ship that had been in accidents, and, we're looking to, you know, basically finagle their way out of their problems because the insurance company wouldn't pay, is, you know, the only film that ever really covered that was a German propaganda film on Titanic, unfortunately, but that probably got closest to the real truth. You know, tell us something about, you know, some of your seaborne adventures.
Yeah, well, the Liberty is where you would want to start in terms of looking at a seagoing conspiracy related to a famous ship. It was a U.S. spy ship. It's not like it wasn't doing something that it oughtn't. It's job is its job. It was in international waters at the time of the famous attack. They were under the impression all aboard that Israel was America's friend, and when the fighter jets appeared and did their surveillance and passed on by, they waved and cordially saluted them as friends, allies. There were some pilots that waved back in cordial fashion, and everyone thought that everything was fine until the next round, where they came at the ship and strafed it with fire and started killing crew members. And then these motorized torpedo boats showed up, and they started strafing the ship with gunfire, and the ship was under attack, and there were some elements of confusion to begin with, because they weren't sure who this was. And then they saw the Israeli Air Force symbols and other flag type of identifiers that told them exactly who this was. They also were subject to a torpedo attack that ended up taking a huge divot out of the center of the hull of the ship. The entire infrastructure of the ship was imperiled as a result, and it's really quite a miracle that it managed to stay afloat. The surgeon on board that was in charge of sick bay deserves to go down in the annals of American naval history and military history as one of the greatest heroes of all time in any kind of military theater, because he had been wounded. He was bleeding from his wounds. He had some of his intestinal organs and other organs hanging out. He had to wear some gear to keep his innards from falling out and spilling out onto the deck. He managed to, through the grace of our Lord, to carry on and to operate on a number of sailors and save their lives, even though he was in this desperately imperiled state. And he carried on in an alternative sick bay, because even the sick bay was attacked and it ended up flooding, and they had to move to another level of the ship and carry on with their treating of the wounded. Over 70% of the crew were wounded, and well over half were terminally ill as a result of the injuries that they had sustained. It's really unforgivable. The lifeboats, the inflatable rafts that were...
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
You know what my mission was when I started this, when I was so excited? I still am excited after 21 years. I said, anybody who's got mouth must use Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash if they want to stay healthy. I'm going to make sure that it is available to anywhere I can put the product.
You got a lot of zinc in these products.
Zinc inhibits plaque growth. Zinc is also known to have an antibacterial properties. Also, zinc works to eliminate bad breath by destroying volatile sulfur compounds. Such an incredible product. And
wow.
I'm so proud to say my wife did that and saved my life, saved my mouth. And she is the mother of all the people who are using a Vitamer toothpaste and mouthwash in the world.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Numana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high-fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food storage I love to eat. Yum!
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Welcome back, Power Hour Nation. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Freund. Joining us in this hour is Timothy Spearman, academic, noted author, screenplay writer, and guy. And we were talking with the USS Liberty and the ship's physician, Dr. Richard Kuiper. Yes. Okay, I have to switch to the other side of the steel plate in my head. I was looking over the biography of Dr. Richard Kuiper, the ship surgeon, and, you know, just an amazing man. As we're hearing from Timothy, I never really looked into how badly wounded the doctor was and the things that he had to do to keep his shipmates alive. And, you know, this is just a tremendous story. I also see that in 1973, he nearly died in a plane crash. And... in Georgia, and that ruined his surgical career, and he lost the use of his right hand and arm. So we also know that's the high list in getting rid of people is plane crashes. So we wonder if you know, he was trying to be retired earlier from life by the forces of darkness. But this is just an amazing individual. Captain McConnell was one of my heroes because he didn't leave the bridge. He stood at his post. He was severely wounded. He had a tourniquet on his leg. And, you know, that would have probably laid out anybody, anywhere. And he just didn't knuckle under, you know. So they shot this ship to just pieces. I'll never forget seeing its picture on the front cover of Life magazine as a child and just never forgetting, you know, that this ship looked like a piece of Swiss cheese. And Timothy tells me it was like 5,000 holes shot in it. This is just, you know, unbelievable. The other just insult is Captain McConnell was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor, and he was the only person not to get it from the president in the White House. He got it from the Secretary of the Navy in a building at a Navy yard. And as almost an insult to just the you know, this heroism beyond belief, because it's not like you were at war, you were at peace. This was a sunshine run. You're a spy ship. You're an American ship. you know, the last thing in the world you would ever expect is someone's going to, you know, attack you. So this is just like you'd see in MASH, you know, like you're out sunning yourself on the deck and catching some rays. It's a holiday run, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you're in the middle of an inferno. And everybody just had to attend the station, do their duty, just like they were in any battle that you would have been in the South Pacific in World War II. But instead of propeller-driven planes, these are jet fighters with heavy-duty weapons. You're shot, bombed, torpedoed. It is just beyond belief, really, that they survived. But there's an old saying that liberty will not be erased from this earth, that we'll always have liberty. And there is a God-given message in there. No matter what you throw at liberty, you can't sink it. You can't destroy it. It will survive. The clue is we have to be like the crew on the Liberty and not give up and just keep fighting for it. And it's kind of ironic that Liberty, Missouri is the close home of Power Hour Nation. So liberty will not be extinguished from this planet, because we're not going to give up. We're not going to turn turtle and run. We're going to fight for it. We're going to keep it. We're going to maintain it. And no matter what they do to us, you're not taking it away. So continue with your story, Tim.
Nice. Yeah, the ship was rerouted to Malta, which has an interesting history. The Maltese language has got connections with the Hebrew language, and it's an interesting place, no doubt, and the birthplace of the Catholic military order known as the Knights of Malta. But at any rate, the port facility is an ancient one, dating back to the time of the Crusades, and the ship was taken into port and completely refitted, and all of the holes in the hull were summarily repaired with riveted new plating that was placed where it had to be placed to hide all the wounds. The massive hole in the hull caused by the torpedo attack, that was all repaired. The hole in the superstructure of the ship was somehow removed, and they had it looking brand new, so that when they returned to port stateside, not with great fanfare and not with much in the way of press coverage, and not certainly at the port facility that they were supposed to disembark at, but another naval port that they pulled into. Not too many of the families were on hand, probably because they changed the port of recall at the last minute, and a lot of people couldn't get down to where they were coming into port. So that was not a very fond welcome home greeting to naval heroes. And I imagine that most of them did share the story with their families. Unfortunately, the story could not be shared with the American press and with the American people, though certain of the more valiant crew members have over the years done their bit to try and pass the truth down related to this crime to the next generations. So, yes, my publisher is in contact with a good number of the crew, and as a former Navy man himself, he has done his best to try to get the true story out to the public, and probably it's one of the most important things in his career and his life as a project, so good for him. And so how does that connect to the Titanic? Is that where you want to go next?
Well, not so much to connect to it, but the Titanic was also one of those military intelligence operations, because the Admiralty pretty much controlled at that time all the major merchant vessels so that they can be converted quickly into armed merchant cruisers or troop transports and such. And, you know, we're just on the verge of a major war coming along with Germany, that the British government was more than willing to pave over any ambiguities in the story about the Titanic. And, you know, you did a radio play on Titanic, and it was quite good. Tell us a little bit about that and your understanding of the Titanic story.
Yeah, people might want to go on YouTube and listen to the radio play, Titanic Ship of Fools. A lot of effort went into that, and it hasn't had much in the way of visits over the course of time that it's been up, and not sure quite why. I suppose being hidden in Google searches or whatever so that people aren't finding it. I'm not sure what they're doing, but it's a well put together piece of work with lots of visual displays throughout the course of the exposition, and it's entertaining to look at the pictures while you're listening to the radio play. But at any rate, the story is that the White Star shipping line was owned by the Jesuit order of the Catholic Church, and unbeknownst to most people, Captain Smith had been through a number of seagoing so-called accidents, and a lot of these accidents or incidents, I think would be a better word, involving explosions and fires and the ship running aground or hitting some type of shoals, and other accounts of various incidents that took place on board the Olympic and other vessels that he was in charge of over the course of his naval career. Well, if you have one such maritime incident, your career is usually on the rocks. It's basically your mariner's license gets revoked and you're no longer in business. But far from this happening to our Captain Smith, who had suffered a number of these incidents, numbering some 20 seagoing so-called accidents. Yet instead of him losing his mariner's license, he was promoted to the Commodore of the Fleet, which is the highest ranking ship's captain in the entire fleet. So instead of being disciplined and maybe even fired, he's given the promotion to the highest position that a captain can have. And so clearly these are not deemed by the White Star shipping line to be accidents and mishaps and signs of incompetence and just a abject series of failures, but on quite to the contrary, he's being commended and lauded for his successes and given a promotion. So what that means is that these series of sabotage incidents were probably orchestrations, and that he has done his part in participating in something conspiratorial in nature, which was probably meant to target certain individuals who were unwanted baggage to be disposed of at sea. And he did his due diligence and his duty in all regards. And so that's what the public doesn't know about Captain Smith. The other thing to note is that the White Star is a symbol in terms of the occult, which points to the star Sirius, just like White House and White Hall in London. These are symbolic entities which point to the star Sirius, which also has associations with the Egyptian god Set, and it's also known as the Morning Star, which is Lucifer. So when you have a star that has associations with the Egyptian god Set, and you get the word sun set, and you think that that refers to the sun that's supposed to be the center of our heliocentric solar system, but it turns out that it's actually referencing the morning star, which appears above the horizon in the morning and then sets below the horizon in the evening. You realize that your whole language is infused with occult references to certain things that the secret societies and mystery schools that devised our language have infused our language with, because it is their secret religion and they are cognizant of it in all that they do. And so they've infused our language with terminology that refers to it. So look at how often the word set is used, you know, set the stage, set the table. The stage is set. Is everyone set? I mean, it's everywhere. The stage set, the film set. It's, you know, it's ubiquitous, this term. It's such a common word in our language, and it just basically lets you know that Satan is there, present, watching everything that you do, participating in even your meal, whether it be your last supper or your first. He's there, and they want you to know it, or at least they want it to be known. And so, yeah, the White Star shipping line is deeply sinister and definitely was taking care of business and murdering people at sea where there would be no witnesses, including John Astor, Isidore Strauss, and Benjamin Guggenheim, two of which were U.S. congressional officials, and they were trying to stop the passage of the Aldrich Bill, which would bring into effect the Federal Reserve Banking Bill for the creation of this so-called federal banking institution, which is not, by the way, federal. But it's interesting to note that it came into effect, and the Federal Reserve Bank was created the very next year in 1913. So J.P. Morgan, who was the Vatican banker that funded the construction of these great ships, he had orchestrated this deception where the Olympic and the Titanic sister ships would be swapped on April Fool's Day. And indeed, that's exactly what happened. So Robert Ballard, the U.S. Naval Intelligence operative that went down to basically film the wreck of the so-called Titanic, his photographic dissolves show that the bulkhead design of the ship on the ocean floor is, well, let's just say it matches the blueprints for the sister ship, the Olympic. And there's a prop on this ship that also has a serial number that accords with that of the Titanic. Well, that's not exactly proof of anything, because they do often share the parts of another sister ship for various reasons. But let's just say that the there's an ample amount of evidence to show that it's not the Titanic that's on the ocean floor, but in fact the sister ship, the Olympic. It had been damaged in several seagoing incidents. Captain Smith in charge in each occasion, of course. And one of them involved a collision with the U.S. or with the U.K. naval boat called the HMS Hawk as the ships approached the narrows of an inlet and collided because they came into one another's wakes and were drawn in because it creates a kind of suction effect. And it sustained a mortal injury, which basically threw the keel out of alignment. And though cosmetic repairs could be orchestrated in Belfast, they could not structurally repair the ship so that it could carry on. Its life expectancy was basically truncated, and it was slated for decommissioning. And so they had sea trial type inspections, and it passed through the inspector just giving it a clean bill of health. I'm sure that there was some type of bribe or some type of corruption involved in this issuance of a certificate of clearance. And then the ship swap was orchestrated, and that's what happened. So the three men that I'd mentioned that were killed on board the Titanic, the story that I have is that Captain Smith actually held a revolver on them and some of the other passengers and told them to back off, that they were not going to be allowed to board lifeboats, that it was women and children first. Well, if Bruce Ishmay got on board one of the lifeboats, one of the elect on board, it's rather unprecedented that some room would not be reserved for these three men, because they represented the national security of the United States. And if Captain Smith is the one preventing them from boarding, you can see that he's under instructions as a Jesuit of the short robe himself to make sure that these men are not going to survive this ocean-going disaster. Now, it's interesting to note that there were
Tim, I may interject. Tim?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, so I just want to make sure, like, we're up to the two-minute warning.
Okay.
Just so you know.
Yeah, just quickly to make the point, there were Chinese passengers on board, and it's only recently come to light that that's the case. These stowaway individuals were on the same lifeboat as Bruce Ishmay, and there's nowhere to hide. When you're on a lifeboat, it's a very small vessel, and everyone aboard is cognizant of everyone else being on board, but they portray it as them being in a hidden capacity on this lifeboat, and no one seemed to know that they were there and all this kind of nonsense. I believe that they were part of the covert operation to damage the ship before she even disembarked in Southampton by putting a piece of gelignite in the coal to cause a coal bunker explosion just below the water line near the bow, so that the ship was taking on water before she even set sail. When the passengers that survived were brought into port in New York, those Chinese passengers were amongst the survivors. They were not welcome in the United States, and there were efforts to send them back to China. I do not put this down to just sheer racial prejudice. I think that they needed to spirit them out of the country as covert operatives and to send them someplace where they could not be interviewed or even known about, because they were part of the operation and their existence, their very existence, had to be expunged from history. And it was only recently.
Okay, Tim, we're out of time. We're getting the music. We got to wrap up. We thank you for coming out and giving us a lot of information on Titanic and Liberty. Very important. And one quick thing I'd like to say, I just got a note. There's a Dr. Richard Bartlett in Texas treating COVID patients with a corticosteroid called Budesonide, and it knocks out the cytokine storm. It's doing very well. He's also using an antibiotic called clarithromycin and zinc. So there are answers. There's just no media to tell it to you, except Power Hour Nation and Company. So thanks for coming out. I'm George Freund, your guest host from Canada, and Timothy Spearman, our saint of academia, here from Canada as well. Until the next time, God bless you all. Liberty.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.